You know, one of my shows I had on recently was about disclosure. You know, I hear so many different things, and maybe this will be the year that we hear some of those things. The government, I think, has been trying to do that for, you know, through movies and TV shows and even X-Files. There seems to be a little bit in there as well. And so at some point, maybe there will be. So my buddy Art, who once in a while catches different things, and I've interviewed him, he catches some shows on my site, wanted to talk to me about something and continued about the Mike Brown, some other things going on with Mike Brown. So, hey, it's a new year. It's February. It's almost Valentine's Day. So that has nothing to do with this, but I'm going to bring Art on and welcome him from Florida. How you doing, Art?
Hi, TJ. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Now that we got more snow up here, you're missing the snow. I'm telling you, you should move back up here.
Have you seen any Men in Black in your area lately?
Just a few. They were shoveling. They were helping me shovel yesterday. You should have seen it. We had a good time. So,
well, I'll tell you what. I believe it because I think they're all laid off now. Because of this disclosure coming around, I think all the Men in Black out there are laid off. They can't find employment.
You think that the Men in Black are going to be laid off? Really?
Yeah. And even then, I wonder what the heck do those guys put down on their resume. Oh, I have some experience hassling some people. Saw some UFOs out there.
Yeah, really. What kind of experience do you have? Are you good with people? Not so much. I'm pretty bad with people, really. I don't say much. I'm almost a pure alien. And so we're kind of joking around. Do you believe that there are Men in Black at all, Art?
I know. That one's a tough one to swallow. But, you know, I did see this the History Channel, the Mothman. They had a show on the Mothman. And all of a sudden, these Men in Black show up for that thing, too. I don't know, man. It's hard to digest that one. It really is. And you and I joke about it. But,
right.
You know, every time I come on your show, you keep bringing up disclosure. It's going to happen. And I go, you know, I quiet up. I usually go, yeah. Cold day in hell, that's going to happen. But you know what? It's pretty cold where you're at right now, isn't it?
It's pretty cold. We're going to be below zero. So what are you saying? Do you have information on something that I know that you follow certain things? And you know what, I talk about UFOs a little bit, but I don't follow it as much as other people. I like it, but there's so many other things that I look at. So what do you know?
Well, for the first time, TJ, I'm going to tell you that I'm a little more open to the idea that disclosure just might happen. It could be the start of it now. It really could.
And why do you say that, Art?
Well, there's a lot of chatter and debate going on a lot of the talk shows. And what happened was on December 16th last year, 2017, so this is like a little over a week before Christmas, the New York Times came out with an article on a secret Pentagon program where they were studying unidentified phenomena. And they spent $22 million from 2007 through 2012 on this research. And it's under the name Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. This is the New York Times. The New York Times generally does not put out articles on UFOs. So this started quite a discussion out there on a lot of the talk shows, and CNN eventually covered it, and they showed a video of a Navy pilot, it's a video of a UFO, and they call it the Tic Tac UFO. And I had my friend call me from CNN, and he saw it on CNN. He called me, and he was real excited about it. It's like, I asked him, what the heck is a Tic Tac UFO? I just heard about it. I didn't really know what that was, but it's shaped like a Tic Tac.
Huh.
So this started to make the rounds out there quite a bit. And Linda Howe, she's claiming that December 16th, 2017 is already a historical date due to this.
Hmm.
Here we have the government admitting that there's UFOs, there's stuff that's unidentified in our airspace.
Yeah, if they're going that far, then how much, you know? And I really believe they're being pressured to do this, honestly speaking, by the visitors. I mean, maybe you don't see that as well, but just the different people I've talked to, and I believe that our alien brothers and sisters who are visiting us, they're all really, none of them are out to hurt us. And I also believe that they are, there's an agenda to slowly allow the truth out so that we find the truth. And it's happening now because I think this is the timing of when it was most supposed to happen. And I also believe in the past we've had visitors that maybe didn't have our best interest in mind. And I think those ones have been driven away. I don't know for sure. That's just the way I kind of feel about it after talking to different people that have had contact with ships and beings and so forth. You haven't been taken yet, have you, Art?
I have. What'd you say?
You haven't been taken? Haven't been taken on board yet?
Oh, no, I have not. I've not been taken.
Have you been beamed up at all, maybe?
No, not exactly. My first impressions of this, TJ, I was thinking, okay, Pentagon's admitting to looking at UFOs, you got unidentified craft in our airspace, and at first I'm thinking, this is corny, you know? Okay, so they started this program in 2007, so that's 60 years after Roswell. There's a 60-year gap in there, and all of a sudden now they're admitting there's UFOs. So to me, my first impression of this was really, it was kind of corny, but as it progressed and as they actually interviewed this Navy pilot on the news and all this stuff, and this stuff was all going on around Christmas time, and I think a lot of people might have ignored it. And even then, you know, we all kind of grow kind of numb of this subject because it's just,
right,
for the longest time, you know, we've spent so much ridicule and all that. So finally this comes out, and you think about it. You think of all the ridicule we've had through all the years, and you look at Project Blue Book, in the Robertson panel and the Condon report, every one of those came out like in the late 60s. And they're all saying, you know, UFOs was just, you know, our imagination, you know. And to have this come out now, it's, but anyway, for the longest time now, Tom DeLonge, I'll mention some of the main characters of this, and that's what's so obscure about this. And it's difficult to get a handle on this, TJ. And I'm trying still, but Tom DeLonge, he's a rock star. He was a singer at Blink 182. Does that ring a bell with you?
Absolutely. We play some of his music, believe it or not, on my radio station.
He is somewhat behind this, believe it or not. And he's been talking about this for a couple of years now. And he said, oh, yeah, disclosure is just around the corner. No, I think a lot of people are kind of ignoring him until now. All of a sudden, when this made the news, it's like, whoa. You know, and he's got this Two Stars Academy. And there's a lot of people, retired defense people and CIA people, that are joining his academy on this. And
really?
They're all now talking. Oh, yeah, they're now talking. But, you know, for the last couple of years, I kind of blew Tom DeLonge off, too, because just to me it's just kind of bizarre that, you know, the government would give all the secrets to a rock star out there. And but I know, you remember the WikiLeaks when that mm-hmm. stuff started coming out, the emails and stuff, and
right.
the Russians and... But anyway, I know his name showed up on that, and he was corresponding with John Podesta. No, I don't know if that guy rings a bell
nope.
with you, but
he
was involved a lot with the Clintons. And Steve Bassett, who's an activist on this stuff for years, but he's been saying there's a lot of people in Congress that know the UFO alien reality. They know it, and they're all slowly wanting to come out with it. So that's kind of behind this, too. But if Hitler was voted president, they were all talking that John Podesta would have been responsible for this disclosure. And
yeah, that's what she... Didn't she say something, too, in her campaign that she was going to find out about it and release it or whatever, something to that effect?
Exactly. Not only did she say something, but John Podesta got verbal about it, too. And he was an advisor for Obama, too. And John Podesta goes back to Bill Clinton days. So there was a lot of talk that Hillary was going to be the disclosure project, or the disclosure, to give up the disclosure as a president, and that never happened. But the other thing that's puzzling me right now, all this made the news in December, and it's still talked about pretty heavy now on the talk shows, but there's been nothing about Trump. Not even one comment
mm-hmm.
from him
yeah.
on this, and that puzzles me. I know during the election, there were some of us that were betting that he was going to poke fun at Hillary over this stuff and Podesta, but he never did. As far as I know, he's never said anything, never made any claims on any of this UFO stuff.
You know, I saw an article. I saw an article online, actually. And you don't know what you can believe, but it actually claimed that Trump was kind of a believer in this, and they felt that maybe he would come forward. But I don't know where they got their information, believing that he had. I don't know if he had witnessed something or somebody he knew witnessed something. So I do remember reading something about him, but I didn't expect that he would probably come forward on it. But who knows? You know, we're seeing a lot of things change, and they're changing rapidly. And I believe, you know, transparency is what we're heading towards with everything. So we're finding, look at all these men that have fallen, you know, with the things that they've done. And look at all these other things that are being exposed. And this is kind of the order of the day, I think, is that we are going to see more of these truths that have been hidden away come forward. And that's why I believe it may not happen this year. I don't know. I hope it is. Wouldn't that be cool? How would people react, do you think, if they said that, you know, we've had contact with UFOs and aliens?
I think it would be great, and it would be nice to, you know, shout it from the rooftops. I told you so. I told you there was something to these UFOs. Because all the ridicule, all the years on this, and now, you know, all of a sudden, there may be some reality to this after all, you know. I mentioned Robert Bigelow on a previous show. He is an aerospace billionaire.
Okay.
He isn't very much involved with a hotel business and he's got his own aerospace company. He was the one that was responsible some for this this secret program. And the name I want to bring up, Harry Reid. He is a retired senator from Nevada. He's been our senator for 30 years.
Yep, that name rings a bell.
Now, he's the one that is responsible for coming up with this $22 million spent on the Pentagon. And there's an interview with him and George Knapp, and he comes around and says, yeah, this stuff is for real. And I was responsible for that. And I know Stanton Friedman, I know he made a comment on one of the shows that someone that's been a senator for 30 years coming out and saying this stuff is real, and that there's, you know, they spent some money on it. That's no chopped liver. That's you know, something else. And I kept thinking too, you know, are they going to backpedal this? You know, they're going to say, oh, well, that wasn't exactly what we meant or something. But it's out there now. It's made the news, and everyone's saying this is just the start. This is just the start of this. So this year that we're in now may very well be the disclosure year. We may find out a lot of things on this. Let's hope for that.
Yeah, I think it, you know, some people feel it would collapse the governments of the world, and I don't believe that would be the case. Some people think people would go running and screaming in the streets, you know, and again, I don't think that would be the case. And, you know, depending on how they tell us, you know, if they tell us, well, these are bad beings and they're going to take over, you know, which I don't believe they are, because they could have taken over any time they wanted. So that would be a lie. And I've heard rumors that, you know, there was an agenda at one time to use this to unite the New World Order. They were going to make it seem like we were under invasion by these beings, and they portrayed the Greys as being the ones that were going to do it. And you've seen it in the movies. And this was an idea that was, I believe was passed around, that they were going to scare us enough that we would all be willing to give up our rights and fight as one nation, one world. And that was kind of a goal that I think has been set aside. And I think now we're moving in a different direction, because many of these people that are powerful have been told, you don't have an option. We don't normally interfere with your beings down here on this planet. We respect all life. But we have been kind of given the green light to move forward to make your world a better world. Wouldn't it be great if they did that? Imagine what we could learn from them if they shared, which I believe they would. You know, we probably wouldn't have illness anymore. Could you imagine that, Art?
That would be great. It would be great to get away from the dark ages of cover-up, which I think we've been in all these
years. And the dark ages of war, and the dark ages of people starving, and with their technologies and their abilities, they're so much more advanced than us, just for showing up here. I think they've conquered as far as lack of food. I think they've conquered so many things that we haven't figured out. And if they shared health issues, you know, health care, we have this big issue over health care, and to me that's a myth more than anything. And these beings, I've heard stories about these beings, they don't get old and die. People talk about the grays. Have you heard much talk about that? That they really don't age. They've kind of figured out how to overcome that. Have you ever heard about that, Art?
No, not that side. I'm not really familiar with that side of it.
So if they've overcome disease and aging and know how to obviously keep you healthy and no food shortage, no reason for wars, what a wonderful world it would be. Just imagine that.
Agree. Yeah, and there's people that now they're trying to do Freedom of Information Act requests on this secret Pentagon program to get more information. And they haven't had any luck, and they get responses. Due to unusual circumstances, we can't respond to your FOIAs. So, I thought that was kind of funny.
That is kind of funny. Well, we're busy right now, and we'd love to help you out, and we'll be glad to tell you everything. By the way, when I do send you a letter, it's going to be blacked out, and the only thing that will be on there is your name. So have a nice day. You know, something like that.
But Grant Cameron seems to have the most handle on this, the most insight on this.
Who's Grant Cameron?
Listen, he's another researcher. He's a Canadian researcher, and he had a lot to do with the history of the presidents on the UFOs and stuff they've claimed and said and that type of thing. But he's pretty on top of this one. And he says this is orchestrated. He says that somebody is orchestrating this, and it's like little steps, and this is just the first step. This to admit that there's stuff in our airspace that we can't identify.
I'm sure
that's the start of it.
Anything like that doesn't get out by accident. So yeah, absolutely, I'd agree that it's orchestrated. The only question is, what is the agenda here? Because usually there's an agenda, isn't there?
Agree, and I don't know what it is, but I know the other suspicion which Bassett mentioned was that he thinks a lot of these people, you know, you have a lot of people in the government still that want the truth to come out, and you have a lot of people that are retiring now that want the truth to come out. And for a while, they were all kind of teaming up with John Podesta, and they were going to, you know, when Hillary Clinton became president, they were going to do something, but since that didn't happen, they all seem to be going to Tom DeLonge now because he already has an academy out there. He's already put his money into this. And a lot of these retired people are going to him, and it sounds like they're going to release more stuff through him too. And he's the one that said, oh, there's going to be an announcement soon, and everybody kind of blew it off. And the orchestration is to get the New York Times to come up with an article. That's what Grant Cameron says. And I guess the Washington Post had an article that same day, so that's already kind of planned, you know. They kind of wanted this to come out that way.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, our press, they pretty much do what they're told to do. And I remember somebody years ago told me this, and I don't remember who it was. But they knew somebody that worked at a network. And this person that worked at a network told this individual that I knew something to the effect of that there were two things they couldn't talk about in the press. I don't remember what the other thing was, but one of them was UFOs. They could never, ever talk about that. So they've been told what truth they can bring up, or what lies, I guess, or whatever they're allowed to talk about is what's given to them. And there's certain things you stay away from, even if you witness it yourself, even if you have a cameraman with you and he films it. Nope, not going to do that. So it's a big shift. If our press is starting to look at this a little differently, that means somebody gave them the green light, as far as what I know, because I think they're kind of controlled as well.
Yeah, one reporter said she couldn't understand why our government would spend $22 million on UFOs. She says, pilots see UFOs all the time, and it was a really stupid comment, I think, and our military pilots, you know, when they start seeing stuff they can't identify, it sounds pretty serious to me. And you and I know, you know, it's been going on for years. One thing they say, you never discuss religion, and never discuss politics. So what do you do with UFOs? It covers both of those topics, you know?
Yeah, I guess so. But you know that with that reporter talking about, well, why would they do something like this when this is just really probably a cover-up, because they've been doing it since Roswell and maybe before then. And this is just their latest, what they're calling this research that they're doing. It's been going on. There's just
Agree. And that's just it. There's such a gap between Roswell and 2007 when they claimed they stopped
Project Blue Book, but you know there were things they probably had contact. You know, I've heard reports that there are beings, and I don't know if I buy it completely, but there are beings in parts of different hangars and different air bases that are there from other planets. There's supposedly one in New Mexico. There's an underground bunker or a base there, and there are alien beings that are there. I don't know if that's true, but yeah, who knows? We probably had interaction with them for a long time, but I believe they are the beings visiting us are the ones that are pushing this forward, because I don't think otherwise it'd be coming out. I really don't. They'd keep the old status quo. Something's making them change, you know?
Well, there's a lot of gossip now that this Robert Bigelow, he's got some buildings, some hangars, and supposedly there's material, and that's going to be something this year that they're going to come out with. So, but you don't talk gossip until it happens.
Right.
Robert Bigelow is an interesting guy anyway. They say that he has spent more of his own money on researching the paranormal and UFOs than anybody ever has. And he goes back quite a few years. Now, we used to talk a lot, and I don't know what we all discussed and what we've discussed online and offline, but do you remember the Skinwalker Ranch? Did I ever tell you about that?
The Skinwalker Ranch?
Yes.
No,
yes.
I do not remember a conversation about that.
Okay, this is a ranch in Utah. And they had cattle mutilations, all kinds of weird stuff going on there. Well, Robert Bigelow bought that ranch, put a big fence around it, and studied this stuff for like 10 years, 20 years or so. This is back like in the mid-90s. So he's always been into this anyway, on his own money. And he was responsible for NIDS also. Let me see if I can find it here. NIDS was a National Investigation Discovery Science, I think, what it stands for. And he had scientists that investigated a lot of this back then. But he kept a lot of that to himself. Nobody really knew what all he found out. And I know George Knapp used to talk about the Skinwalker Ranch, and he called it the Paranormal Disneyland. I don't even know what to believe of all this, but it's like a smorgasbord. Anything you name it, orbs and cattle mutilation, UFOs, ghosts, and just all the paranormal you can possibly think of, all was on this ranch.
He's the guy I should interview.
Oh, well, they did. 60 Minutes, this I mentioned on the last show, 60 Minutes he was interviewed, and he only talked just a couple of minutes on this stuff. And the woman says, people are going to think you're crazy on this UFOs. And he says, I don't give a damn. It's the truth. They're out there. It's happening, you know.
Hmm.
And then now for the news to come out that he was awarded this $22 million from our Pentagon to study this stuff. So all of a sudden there's more reality to that, too. It's like, you know, it's all interesting. It is. I'm intrigued by it. I'm not sure what to think, and I don't know if I got a complete handle on all this, but I am very intrigued by it, put it that way.
Yeah, me too. And I guess, you know, it's easy to get our hopes up and think that maybe something's going to happen. But we all know that generally it takes a long time. And sometimes it could be a while before we see things, you know, and such is the case, you know. So on and so forth. What are you going to do? You know, it's either going to happen in our lifetime or who knows. I think it will happen. In our lifetime.
I would like to know the truth of Kinross. I would still like to know the truth of the Kinross incident. And I myself personally believe that it's not a real disclosure unless they come out with all of that. And there's so many doors they have to open on that. I mean, It'd be nice for them to tell those families what happened to the pilots. What exactly happened to them?
Yeah. Wouldn't that
and
be
I
nice?
Don't think that will ever. I don't think that will ever happen.
I think it will.
I don't think they'll
I
ever.
Think it will. I mean, people may be gone, the ones that knew the pilot and his radar operator. Their families, the immediate ones, might have passed on before that happens. But there's going to be a day, I really believe that, again, from what I believe, Art, and hey, all this stuff is a little out there, really, but I believe that our government is going to be forced to tell the truth. It's just a matter of time. This is why they're letting a little bit out, a little bit out, because there's an agreement, and the agreement has been, I believe, with alien beings and other beings of higher vibration. And they said, you have till this time. We're going to let you continue to play your game. And now the game is coming to an end. And you know this. And it's going to be revealed. And people will be given the truth. And families will be given the absolute truth. And how long that's going to be, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But I believe it will happen. I may not be doing a show when that happens. I might be doing it in another dimension. You and I might be in another dimensional or place or heaven, whatever you want to call it. Hey, Art's with me now. We're up here in the clouds. Go ahead, Art. Look at Art. They're down on Earth. They're finally doing the full disclosure, Art. I told you.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, TJ, now everything I talked about now is what I'm picking up on, and it's my interpretation.
Right.
But you get some other people on your show to talk about this. My God, if you could get Bigelow on your show, that'd be great, or Tom DeLonge. But even David, I would curious what he's got to say about these latest developments. I'd be really curious what
David
he's got to say.
Twitchell?
Twitchell.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yes.
I'll get him on again, too. So
see what his interpretation is, because I mean, to me, they keep saying it's big, and I keep saying, oh yeah, right, but and then it's like, well, maybe they're right, maybe this is going to actually happen now, you know.
I think it is, and at some point, because there have been things I've been hearing for years. I mean, going back to the '80s, about certain things happen, and certain things falling in place. And I, at the time, I'm going, well, maybe, well, you know. And then I've watched, there's been quite a few things. And I've watched these things play out. And it's like, the sources that I truly trust, I think were telling me the truth. There's no timeline, because the future is not an exact thing. So somebody could not come out and say, even if they're psychic or whatever, and say, by the end of 2018, it will be revealed that UFOs do exist and they've been visiting and taking them, so forth. That's always subject to change, because our actions and our thoughts affect everything. So there's that free will thing that enters into it. But I believe it's part of a bigger agenda, and it's an agenda to move us in a very good direction. And while the world seems like it's in chaos, and there's a lot of strange things, negative things going on right now, there's a lot of good things, too, that I read about that are going on as well that our press doesn't cover. One of those good things is Art. He's a man down in Florida. He's my guest this week, and he's going to tell us also more. We had been talked about Mike Brown and in the past, not just Mike, but who are the characters in all this? There's
Ada and Harriet and Beverly Brown, and they've been on UFO documentaries talking about their dad, Melvin Brown, and
Melvin,
he was a witness.
That's what I was trying to
Melvin,
remember.
Melvin E. Brown, and he was a witness at Roswell. And I had somebody in school that I thought that might have been his dad, and that's a long story. I think it might be best if they just get back to the shows. But well, you and I covered a lot of area. But one thing we did cover, we covered Melvin Brown's military assignments, which I got from a Freedom of Information Act request. And it showed right in there that he was at Roswell. But then there's a lot of mystery to this guy. There always has been. There's always been a mystery cloud around this guy. And one thing is the hospitalization, which you and I talked about, and he a year after Roswell, he was at the Roswell hospital, and then it looks like he was transferred to El Paso, Texas. and behavioral therapy was the category. And then later on, I uncovered something where I guess Beverly, real early in the interviews, when she first started talking to people, she sent something to Leonard Stringfield. It gave a hint of a hospitalization request for not only Melvin, but for Jesse Marcel. And in Leonard Stringfield's book, he describes it a little bit, but then there's no content. There's nothing in there. And I, on one of the last shows we covered that, I was trying to get somebody out there to, either in an old book or an old documentary or something, they know anything about that, the document. I was curious what it is. Hmm. And it supports what we found with his military records. And it supports that, that. So we were debating on, you know, what that really meant, if anything, and if all the Roswell witnesses had to go through some program, and we were speculating that.
I would think so. There would be no doubt in my mind that they would, they just wouldn't go, oh, okay, you guys saw some alien bodies? Yeah, yeah, okay, thanks. They would send you, there would be some kind of briefing and even probably much more than that. I can't imagine, as much of our, as our military does about every little thing, it just makes sense that, yeah, they had to go through some kind of treatment.
Anyway, one thing I have uncovered, and this I want to go into a little bit, because I want to fill in a few gaps that I haven't had a chance when we were talking about all this.
Okay.
And I was telling you that I believe they flew to Michigan in 1971. And I believe that was probably to talk Melvin to returning back to England. That's what I think. But anyway, one thing I did find out, Melvin's family had residence in Hemel Hempstead, England, around that same time. 1971, all the way up to his death in 1986. So they lived at one residence. They lived at one address for 15 years, starting in 1971. So that's Melvin's family. And I made contact with someone that thought they remember Ada and the three daughters living there, but they do not remember Melvin at all. They don't remember Melvin being there. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And they were going to get back with me with possible context in England and never got back with me on that. But anyway, in 1971, Ada and the oldest daughter were registered to vote in Hemel Hempstead. So I know they were in the registered to vote. Melvin, on the other hand, never registered to vote in England. He never did at that residence. So... But that, you know, that might be fine. He's a U.S. citizen. He maybe just never bothered to register to vote over there. And even then, I don't know how that works.
Would he be allowed? Would he be allowed to vote over there?
Now, he may not be allowed anyway. But what I'm after more is the trace. As you know, I'm trying to trace where this guy was exactly. So that would have been another form of a trace if I could have found him over there. There's no indication of Melvin ever registered to vote. Now, here's the thing. He only shows up, his name only shows up in a phone directory in 1980. So of all those 15 years that they lived at that residence, it was always Ada that showed up in the phone book, except for 1 year, and that was 1980. Now, that may be a matter of who pays the phone bills. But again, I'm trying to trace where this guy is. I think he's in the United States. They're saying he wasn't. I think he was in Alpena, Michigan in 1971. Even though I can't prove it yet.
No. But once the disclosure comes out, the first thing they're going to say, by the way, Art, Melvin was, his son went to school with you. We're just going to throw that out there. I'm sure Trump.
Yeah, right.
I'm sure Trump.
That's funny, TJ. No, I think this whole Melvin Brown thing is my personal thing where I would like to, and it drives me nuts because, you know, anyone who's lived in the United States like in the last 20 years, you can trace them. The internet, you can find out anything. But you go back to the 1970s, and all of a sudden, you know, I can't trace exactly where he was.
Right.
And when people say they were never in the United States, they never had a passport, and I say they did, I ought to be able to prove that one way or another. And I will, probably eventually. The truth will prevail eventually. And there are records out there, but sometimes people have to pass away or whatever to get records. But the truth will eventually prevail on that. It's my personal quest. I mean, nobody else cares. This is definitely not a disclosure thing.
Well, you know,
that's funny little
but you know, in a way, it is something that's worthwhile because if it's true, then you met Melvin Brown's son, and Melvin Brown, Mike Brown, told you that his dad was a cook and was saw alien bodies and all those things. So it just proves that Melvin Brown, what his daughters, even though they don't admit that they're related to Mike Brown, what his daughters were saying. So it just backs up all the evidence that's out there about Roswell and all these other alien encounters. You know, Roswell's not the only one. Somebody told me there was one even before Roswell. And I'm sure there were more than many.
God, I wish I could think of the name. Cape Girardeau? We're talking, I can't think. Yeah, there's one in 1941. Missouri.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Missouri. And I think some of that was in the MJ-12 document. The original MJ-12 document mentioned something about Cape Girardeau. Help me out, TJ.
You're probably the one that told me about this. But I don't know anything about it. I might have looked it up briefly, but again, my passion is not so much the whole UFO thing. I'm interested in it, but I have a passion in just finding the truth in everything that's out there. So I don't, you know, I know some people dedicate their whole life to it, and it's like, I can't pick just one topic. I love so many other things that are unknown that are going on, you know, but I'm willing to look things up and check them out. I can look online right now if you want while we're talking.
Yeah, you can. Cape Girardeau, Missouri, 1941. I hope I'm right.
Let me just. You keep talking while I'm typing here. Cape.
I know it's near St. Louis because I know we drove through there when we drove to Texas once. But as you're talking about that, I'm going to take a quote out of Timothy Good's book. This is on dealing with Melvin Brown. Melvin Brown was additionally engaged in espionage work, according to a relative, although no details are available. Now, this is an early book on the Browns. This is probably one of the first interviews they had. This is the first I've heard of this. Espionage, by definition, is some type of spy work. So what did Melvin do? Did he do some James Bond when he was over there, you know, in England, you know? It's another one of those things that... They're never consistent with their story. You know, I never heard anything about espionage again from anything. And one possibility is that I don't think he was around much, and it might have been an excuse they made anyway. Well, where's your dad? Well, he's gone on. He's on that spy work again. He's never home. He's spying, and all that time, I think he might have been here in the United States.
Maybe
another. Another possibility, as we covered on the previous show, is Melvin Brown was at Chick Sands, England, at the base there, and also in Kirk Newton, Scotland. And both those bases were involved with monitoring Russian aircraft and decoding Russian radio waves. So that was a form of spying. And even though Melvin wasn't directly involved with that, he was the one who had to do with the food service on those bases. So the mission of the base was some type of spy. So that might be what this is also interpreted to be. But it's hard to say. And you know, when you don't give out much detail on something, it leaves all the more room for speculation. So, and that's just it.
So Cape Girardeau. Cape Girardeau, yeah. It says an urban legend in Cape Girardeau is believed that an alien cover-up and a crash happened before Roswell. April 12th marked the 75th anniversary of the alleged Cape Girardeau UFO crash, 1941. UFO researcher Michael Huntington said the story dates back to 41 when a reverend was called to what he thought was a plane crash to read the last rites to the passengers. The reverend, who was a minister there, was called out by the local sheriff to come assist in delivering some sort of last rites. That's what the reverend was under the impression that he was going to do. A car arrived at his house, which was nearby, and they drove about 18 miles to outside of Cape Girardeau, closer to the Chaffee area. When they showed up to the scene, it was not a plane crash. It was allegedly a flying saucer, a classic silver disc, round one, that had also started on fire. There were police and fire there to take care of the scene, put out a fire on a local farmer's field. The Reverend arrived and saw a classic flying disc and part of the side ripped open. Two alien bodies that were at least dead and one that was maybe dying, may have been alive, couldn't breathe. The Reverend looked inside the flying saucer and saw wires and components and some sort of alien design, strange hieroglyphics and bizarre knobs and dials. The Reverend knew he couldn't really give the last rites. About that time, an Air Corps arrived from Sykeston's Field and cordoned off the area. So it all became part of the legend, they say, and they went on to talk about that. So true or not, did it happen?
I don't know, but I think it's also covered in, like I said, the MJ-12 document, the first one that came out. I think it mentioned something about that. So what do you think? You think that happened, TJ?
You know, I'm always kind of wondering about these aliens. They have this incredible technology, but they're not very good drivers, are they? They sure seem to crash a lot, don't they? And do they?
That's a common thing mentioned. Oh, you know, they're so advanced. Why do they crash? But all our airplanes that still crash. I mean, I don't know.
Well, then I also heard the theory that they do it deliberately. They do it deliberately to, is their way of interacting or connecting with us or giving us technology? I don't know. And I would tend to believe maybe there's a better chance that it's done deliberately to interact with us in some way. I don't know. But I think
it's an insurance claim too. They get insurance claim or their craft. They get a new one, right?
I suppose
covered somewhat.
They're covered by State Farm or somebody.
Yeah,
they're covered by that gal you see on TV, Flo from.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Progressive Insurance. She shows up. Anyway,
you got it.
I definitely believe that there was a crash at Roswell. Too much to know. Too many people. I'd have to look into the one at Cape Girardeau and see if there's, you know, a lot of eyewitnesses. But I think, you know, there's probably truth in it. I'm open to the possibility.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people think I'm trying to debunk Roswell with the Brown angle. But, you know, you and I've talked, and it's like I'm just trying to get the truth of this whole thing. Now, I'm trying to get them to come up with the truth. I'm trying to get Beverly Bean to spill the beans.
Right.
It'd be nice to know the truth. And again, records will show one way or another on that eventually, I think.
Well,
and I got other people telling me that the Browns, you know, a lot of people look at something like Roswell, and they look at the weakest link. They look at the weakest interview, and then they judge the whole thing by that. And there's people that told me, I mean, the Browns' testimony is not that, there's not much credence to it. They don't get much credit for that. As compared to Jesse Marcel and a lot of the other ones that have a stronger testimony.
Right.
So even now, I mean, if they did come up with the whole truth now, it might help people believe this stuff more. I don't know. I just got a puzzle and a mystery that I'm still trying to solve. So on my end, it's a personal quest on something.
And that is to find out if Mike Brown was really Melvin Brown's son and was the real deal. That's what it is.
Yeah, and what's Melvin doing in the United States? I'm just curious. What did he do here, you know?
He was on spy.
Well, they're saying espionage, but...
You know, you and I talked about it before, about Melvin, how he seemed to show up in all these places. His whole group of people, that same group of people, including Jesse Marcel, right? Didn't they go off to other locations that were somewhat classified, highly classified type places? It was like the whole group.
No, I Jesse's background's different than Melvin's. World War II, I think they were involved with the Philippine liberation thing during World War II. But later years, no, I think they went their separate ways. But you are right in the sense that Melvin was always serving food with a very elite group. There were always elite groups doing something. And yeah, the Germany airlift, Roswell, a lot of that. But I don't know if it's really like secret missions or anything. I don't know if I'd put it that way exactly.
Do you think that, and this is really a bizarre question, and I'm just doing this for fun. Do you think that Melvin ever, you know, made food for aliens? You ever think he made them a pie? And what are they like
to eat? I don't know.
And what do they like to eat? You know, what do you want? What do you eat on your planet? Okay, here you go. We'll get you some grass.
No. Well, if we go by that UFO cover-up live thing from the 80s, I guess they like strawberry ice cream. So I don't know.
That's
what they said on there. That's kind of funny.
Yeah. So why, you are interested in UFOs, but you were interested in them before you met Mike Brown, right?
Yeah, about a year or so. I was reading on UFOs, and then that was why I did my report on it, because I was already reading the subject. And I kept it real simple in class. I didn't want to get anything real controversial, and I just covered the Plain Jane and Project Blue Book, and here's a few pictures, and here's a cloud formation that they identify as a cloud formation, but some people thought it was a UFO. I didn't get into anything really. And even Ken Ross, I did not mention Ken Ross in class, but I was already reading some of that, and it's like, wow, I think Ken Ross is what did it for me. No explanation, for what that was. Even after all these years, it's just...
Was anybody else in your family into UFOs or looking into that possibility?
Not my family as much, but I had a neighbor, like I think I told you before, I had a neighbor that actually told me about... the Armstrong Circle Theater, and that show, they had a show on UFOs, and that Donald Keyhole's microphone was cut right in the middle of a sentence. He's someone else telling me that. So I think my neighbor might have had some influence on me on that, but not as much my family. I think I'm the only one in my family that's really into this topic. In fact,
would,
I think they all
would you say this neighbor is the one that got you interested to begin with then?
No, but I think it might have helped. I was already reading up on him when I was talking to him, but he said, "Well, you're into that. Well, I can tell you about Armstrong Circle Theater," and he was telling me about he was watching it on TV and everything. Yeah, it might have perked my interest a little more. And then with Mike Brown, though, you gotta keep in mind here. I blew that whole thing up back then. I thought the kid was just making this crap up. I thought it was just getting attention, and he had these family issues, and he was very sensitive on that, and I just thought he was making up these bizarre stories. But then, years later, when Roswell made the news, and then to see the Brown sisters on these documentaries, and it's like, going, wow, this is really hilarious.
Right.
But, after, 20 years later, all of a sudden, you see this, and it just kind of clicks with me, and I was just so determined to get to the bottom of it, and then... their interviews are so suspicious now. So I just try to find out what I can. I'm just entertained by it, I guess you could say.
I can't believe you never heard of Roswell when you were 11
no,
years
not.
Old. I can't believe
you're joking, right? You're joking.
No, but I can't believe that. I'm joking, but I'm just saying that you heard of Ken Ross, which I never heard of. But I think as a kid around similar in age to you, I'm pretty sure I heard of Roswell. I think my mom must have talked about it. Because she was really in, we talked, that's where I got it from for me, is that. And nobody ever brought up Roswell to you at all, ever, huh?
I don't think Roswell was really known until for me, I didn't know about until the late 80s, but it was the late 70s when Friedman interviewed Jesse Marcel. That was the first time anyone was ever interviewed on Roswell.
So maybe my timeline's off. Maybe I knew about Roswell later. I could have swore I knew about it younger for some reason, that there had been speculation and rumors of a crash at Roswell. But you don't think it...
Well, be careful. Take the word Roswell out of there. I do know now that there was a book by Frank Scully that came out in the 50s that hints about a crash UFO, but then it starts talking about Venus and a bunch of other things that we know is not connected to it. In fact, the X-Files, Scully, that her name, they came up with that name, and it came from Frank Scully, this that wrote this book in the 50s.
Wow.
But there's nothing concrete on that, but maybe that's what you were hinting about. That book was popular back then. But I think everyone kind of blew that off, you know, that it was just BS, especially because he's saying the craft came from Venus, and pretty much everyone knew already that, you know, there was no life on Venus. So it's kind of like the George Adamski thing. Now, there's another one where, you know, he gets visited by these aliens, oh, and they come from Venus. And
maybe they did.
I don't think there's any life on Venus. Come on, I think we know that one by now.
Maybe we don't understand. Maybe it's life we don't quite understand, or life we don't interpret as being the same as us. But maybe there is some kind of life there.
Maybe. I don't know. I guess I can't say real strongly one way or the other, but I just don't think there's any life on Venus.
You know, I'm going to go to Venus next week. I'll pick you up. I'll pick you up, and we'll take a run over there if you want. Just check it out. It's a little hot, so dress lightly, you know. It's cold in
anyway,
space,
but
it's dress hot on Venus. Sorry, go ahead.
This Robert Bigelow guy, he's going to probably be the first to have a hotel out in space.
That'd be cool.
Okay.
That'd be
cool. It would be cool. So, you feel like spending a weekend out in space. So, you fly out there, and then they put you on this thing that's orbiting the Earth, and it's a hotel, and what happens when people go out there and they start seeing stuff? Oh, I guess there really is stuff out here.
That's when they hit the ejection button.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, so-and-so didn't make it back to Earth. Sorry, we must have lost him, and it's like his luggage. We've lost his luggage, too. His luggage. Wouldn't it be bad if you go out in space and your luggage winds up on Mars? You go there. Hey, where's my luggage? Sorry, we sent it to Mars. What? Great. Now I got to go there and get my luggage back. You know, space would cause more problems than, at least with flights here, it winds up on a flight like going to Vegas or something. But there, it could wind up in Neptune. My underwear's in Neptune, honey. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do anymore. Somebody wasn't paying attention, you know. Anyway, but anything else you want to add to this conversation? Anything more about Melvin Brown, Mike Brown, anything else with that?
I could mention a little bit. I don't know how much we got on time now.
A little more time. Yeah.
A lot of people are trying to understand this bank account and this dormant bank account of theirs. I'd like to try to explain that a little more. First off, when Roswell first came out and the witnesses started coming up, Mac Brazel, who was the rancher, he was the one that found the stuff. And he had a neighbor tell him, you know, you really ought to take this in because, you know, there's a war bounty for stuff like this. And that was what motivated him to take some of the debris to town and you know, drop it off at the Air Force there and show them, you know, these pieces. Well, anyway, you know, later on, he got money some way because they're all saying after this Roswell, all of a sudden he had a brand new truck and he had a brand new freezer for meat and that type of thing. So he got a bunch of money from somewhere. And they always said he was quite poor. So there was always a hint that he probably got awarded money. And that was the reason why he went into town anyway. And that's the same thing. I think they interrogated the guy for 2 days. I think they really told him, you know, you're not going to talk about this stuff, blah, 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 blah. And so he was already kind of mad about things, but it sounds like he got some money. Anyway, I think what happened with the Browns, and all the other thing too, the investigators, when they started researching Roswell more closely, one of the first things they found out was there was missing logs from the base. I mean, there's like a 2-week span where there's all the logs from that time went missing around the time of Roswell. So those two things combined, I think the Browns, when they came out with their story, I think they made up this bank account story.
You think so?
That Melvin was awarded this money because he kept this secret. And I think it because they're saying at the same time, well, he never returned to the United States. And of course he didn't. He left a bank account over there, right? And secondly, though, as far as I know, and you can correct me on this, I don't think there's any other people from Roswell that were awarded money.
That were veterans.
I think Melvin's the only one. So then, you know, the people out there that are really following Roswell, you got to ask yourself, what did Melvin Brown do to get awarded money where none of the other veterans were awarded money. I mean, he guarded the hangar and he guarded the base. Okay, well, there were a lot of other people that guarded that, and there's people that flew the stuff out and all that. None of these other ones, as far as I know, were awarded any money. So why was Melvin awarded money? Anyway, this bank account, there's a paper that, when you get on the YouTube videos and they talk about, there's this paper they flash on the screen, and there's three signatures on it, and it's dated February, I think it's 12th. It's a little over a week before he passed away. And I was trying to figure out for the longest time who signed those. And the very top signature looks like it's Beverly. The second one, I still can't figure out what it is. It might be Ada. Well, the third one, I think, is Harriet's husband. I think that's his signature. And I base that partly because I saw his signature on some of the other Melvin Brown documents. So I think he signed that. But anyway, they're kind of trying to lead on that, you know, there's a bank account on this paper, and then they sign it. And I think they're trying to hint that they all heard him say, you know, while he's dying on his deathbed, that he rattled off the number to this account. But that's what we're supposed to interpret that to be. But I don't really know if that's what happened or not. And they don't say much about it. So, but I do know the researchers tried to find some type of trace of that bank account, and they never could find it.
You know, I truly
believe if there was a bank account, there would be some type of trace of it.
I did some research on Melvin's last words. Do you know what they were?
No, but not exactly his last words, but I do know that they, you know, he was talking a lot about Roswell.
No, his last word, his last word was Rosebud. No, I'm sorry, I'm confusing that with Orson Welles. Sorry, that was from Citizen Kane. I know you're serious about that. Who's going to know the exact words of him at the end? You know, maybe his family. But the thing is, hard to prove all that, isn't it?
With a bank account, I don't think there is. I think a bank account, there would be some type of trace. There would be some type of trace of that bank account. I truly believe that.
So is it out there?
I don't know. I know they were trying to trace it for a while. Anyway, TJ, I think we're done.
Well, thank you so much, and I hope you didn't mind me joking about Rosebud. You didn't respond to me. But
No. You got me thinking, like, what the heck are you talking
remember
about?
Remember that Citizen Kane movie where he says Rosebud? You ever see that movie? And he goes, Rosebud. And it was actually, I think, the name of his wagon or something like that. Sorry, it's just totally...
Yeah, got you.
I was just thinking of famous last words, and that came to mind. Sorry about that. I keep a little bit of levity in it, but also I take it serious what you have to say, and I respect it, so you know that. And I hope we find out more, and if somebody does know more, feel free to contact us if you know anything about this. And Art, thank you so much for being a part of this, and you really learned to open up. Boy, you've gotten really good at that. You know that?
It's still difficult. TJ, it's difficult to talk about this sometimes, but I lighten up a little bit. You know, you and I joke a lot more on that when we're offline on this.
We joke about everything, don't we? But you know, that's the kind of guy I am. You know, I take it seriously, but I don't want to ever be too serious about anything, you know, because life, I think, is meant to be lived with joy and happiness, and we can still reveal the truth and do it in a way that, when we take ourselves too seriously, that's when we're going to be disappointed and go through frustrations, I think, in life. So I've always had a little bit of that in me.
You might have to change your show to Way Beyond Out There. You know?
Maybe we'll do that. Thank you, Art, for being a part of this.
Catch you later. Thank you.